Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, Adam, wondering what you think about funeral processions in traffic. I don't mean to be insensitive, but do we really need them in a big line with their hazards on? And we're all supposed to yield to them like they're royalty? They got GPS, right? They can find the cemetery. Let me know what you think. Thanks. Bye.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Well, one of the greatest cinematic triumphs of all time, Smoking the Bandit, the great Jackie Gleason, when he got stuck behind a funeral procession, said, "I wish they would have cremated us, some bitch." That was a famous Jackie Gleason line. Michael Ovitz in studio. Good to see you, Michael Ovitz.
Thank you for having me.
The book is Who is Michael Ovitz? It's available now at Amazon, and you can bookmark us and click through our website. We always love it. Clients in the past, Steven Spielberg, Meryl Streep, Bill Murray, David Letterman, Paul Newman, Tom Cruise, Martin Scorsese. So such a part, maybe a part. All right, here's a question for you. Like the heavyweight division, you know, Ali, Frazier, Norton back then, back in the George Foreman, you know, things have a sweet spot that can almost never be replicated. The heavyweight division is fine, but it's not that. You know, I mean, you feel like, in a way, Hollywood, because we're so segmented and scattered and fractured off, that it could never be that what it was when you were in when you had the reins of some biggest agencies in the world.
So I don't want to be one of those guys that says, you know, everybody in their generation says, you know, the last generation was the end of the best times, right? But I have to say it.
I mean, it's true. It's true.
I mean, we were in the golden, the last part of the golden era. I mean, you talk about Newman. I mean, this guy was a real movie star, and when he walked in a room, he just had an aura about him, and the community was, you know, flush with economic power, great creative ideas, and also there was a barrier to distribution, so it made it a finite commodity. So if, Adam, you were going to do a television show or a movie, you had limited choices on where it could be distributed. Today's world, you can distribute just about anything.
Tell us some Newman stories, because I have all his race cars, yeah. And I know he was with you during a lot of the years he was driving a lot of my cars, and I know he probably had to balance making movies versus driving, right?
Well, as far as he was concerned, his career was driving. You know, making movies was a hobby. I think he had it backwards. One of the greatest nights I ever had with him was we used to go. He loved clams. He just loved clams, and he would find any excuse to go out for beer and clams. And one night we were in Westport, where he lived in Connecticut. He said to me, "I want to show you something." So I go into his garage, and of course there's a lot of cars in the garage. And he had just finished putting together you remember the old VW Beetle, which they just discontinued?
Sure.
He put a Corvette, 436 Corvette, into the back of that car.
Yeah, I put a V8 in the back of, or sort of the middle, mid-engine on a VW, just a regular Bug, and then at some point ended up donating it to like a junior college or a college, Claremont College or some college out here, and then they had it, and then they like worked on. He would do crazy things to cars, and then at some point he would like donate them. He had a not a Rover, he had a Triumph 2500 or something like that, and I talked to the guy who has it, and it's like it was donated to the college. He was insanely charitable.
His whole life was about charity. That's why he started Newman's Own. The whole concept of that is about giving money away.
I guess nobody sees a person's personality pushing through maybe more than the agent, in the sense that you have to be exposed to a Meryl Streep or a Steven Spielberg or Bill Murray or Letterman. Like, you have to know exactly how they're wired by working with them, right?
Well, you get to know people in different moods and different situations.
But this is not like, I don't know if you really get to know people at a cocktail party because everyone's in a good mood, right. Everyone's got a little buzz going, and it's fine. This is business, you know. And can you give us any stories of anybody you've worked with that's like, what would Meryl Streep be like? How would you describe her?
I mean, she lived down the street from us. Used to drive my kids in carpool to, you know, to school. She's actually the most normal, terrific woman imaginable. There's Meryl Streep, the actress, who becomes a different character every time she does a movie, and a convincing one. And there's Meryl Streep, the person, who's one of the nicest people you'll ever want to meet, down to earth, raised great kids, has a long-term marriage to a fantastic guy, and is just as normal as you could be. So it's
Bill Murray, nutty? Yes.
Yes or no?
I wouldn't call him nutty. I would call Bill unique.
Eccentric.
Unique. Letterman, a little difficult?
Not at all, actually.
Easy?
Probably one of the nicest clients I had. And I write in the book, one of the great moments of my career was a call from Dave on Christmas Eve after we put the show together on CBS, which was a rather difficult slog for him when he was on NBC and he didn't get the Tonight Show. Oh. And he called me on Christmas Eve to thank me for the work that I did, which was very touching.
He got... Newman got him a Volvo with a big V8 yes, engine, and yeah. As the big shoehorn V8 theme continues. Go ahead.
As long as we're on the subject, everything I know about that era, Leno and Letterman and everything was from the TV movie The Late Shift, which you were portrayed in by Treat Williams. It was a very flattering portrayal of you, I thought. How accurate was it to what you... You saw the movie, I assume?
I did see the movie, yes.
How accurate was it to what actually went down?
It was very accurate. It was based on a book that was highly accurate, and I cover a lot of it in my book. It was one of the most unique negotiations I ever went through.
I'll say. Because you weren't – correct me where I'm wrong because my memory is fuzzy, but you weren't they weren't allowed to negotiate, but you could accept negotiations or offers or pitches or something.
Perfectly said.
Oh, well, thank you.
Wow.
Yeah. But that was unique, right?
Brian, enjoy this moment.
That was unique. Explain why.
Dave was under contract to NBC, right. And he wasn't allowed to talk to anybody. And we arranged it so people could come talk to him. He could listen, but he couldn't offer himself up. And he was stuck there for a couple of years after he would have lost the Tonight Show when Jay was going to go on.
I saw Leno Friday night, and I was at an event that he was at, and he did about 15 minutes of stand-up, and I was like, oh, you forget about Leno and like how good he is at stand-up. Mm-hmm. Like you sort of forget that this is what these guys do or how they got there. You're kind of used to this guy from this place and that, whatever. But seeing him do 15 to 20 minutes of like flawless stand-up in a group of, there he is, at the Peterson Museum. It was just like you do kind of get reminded that, I don't know, sort of like when you see... sort of like when a guy plays a tough guy in a movie, but he really is a black belt, right, and you start to think he's the character, and then once in a while he kicks a guy's ass in the street, and you go, oh, he does really know how to do that, doesn't he? You grew up in the San Fernando Valley?
Yep. Not far from you, where you grew up.
I was a North Hollywood guy.
I was a Birmingham High School guy.
God, I think I played my last high school were you guys, were Birmingham Vikings?
No, you were the Huskies, we were the Braves.
Oh, Monroe was the Vikings. Right. And you guys, you grew up in Encino, which is a slightly nicer version of North Hollywood, I would say. South of Ventura Boulevard, you're doing pretty good.
I mean, you're going a little too far, Adam. I mean, I was right next to Burbank Boulevard. I was on the cusp of Van Nuys.
How did show business factor in for you? How did you get into this?
You know, totally by accident, four blocks from our house. We lived in a tract house that my dad bought on a GI Bill. Four blocks was RKO Studios, and no longer there, obviously. And we used to go over there occasionally and sneak under the fence when those kinds of things were permissible, and we used to watch them shoot black and white TV shows. Mm.
I should say, this half of the show brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. Go to dollarshaveclub.com/Adam. And Felix Gray. Go to felixgrayglasses.com Adam. I'll tell you about that in a minute. So you're Burbank and what in that part of the valley?
Balboa Boulevard.
Balboa.
Right, so off that, Burbank.
That is just the valley. That is just the San Fernando Valley. And stuff wasn't even developed that much at that end of the valley, like Chatsworth, Canoga Park.
I know you find this hard to believe, but I'm a lot older than you are.
No way.
So
even yeah. My age, I used to go down to Chatsworth, and a lot of just nothing dirt
there.
Lots
nothing
and,
there.
And nothing.
So when I moved in there, there was nothing north of Burbank. I mean, nothing north of Burbank and nothing west of Reseda Boulevard.
Yeah, it just everything just sort of spilled from Hollywood over to Cahuenga, over the canyon, then it filled up like Toluca Lake and all that where Bob Hope was and everything, and it just kept spreading its way. Now you go through the pass, Santa Susana Pass, you're in the Simi Valley, just keeps spreading. So do you have a thought early about saying, I want to be in show business, but I don't want to be in front of the camera?
No, I actually... And I was pre-med my whole high school and my first year in college. So I worked part-time at Universal and then at Fox, and I got the bug, and that was it. I never had the talent to be in front of the camera, so that wasn't an option for me. Best thing I could do was represent the talent.
How's Tom Cruise to work with?
Easy, best, smart. Wanted to be, met him when he was 19. Paula Wagner from our office brought him in. He is... He sat there, he knew what he wanted, and he was very serious at an early age.
Was he a shrewd producer, businessman early on, or did he sort of develop that? Because he's developed into a very shrewd producer.
I mean, he learned the trade really well and picked it up. He's like a sponge. He learned very fast what to do, what not to do. And if you look at his credits, he worked with fantastic directors at an early age. We gave him a list of 10 directors we thought he should work with, and he ended up working with like 9 of them. One of the movies he did was with Paul, Color of Money, was created off of a sequel to The Hustler, and it was a Marty Scorsese movie.
I heard a story about Marty and Goodfellas and how they were talking about some of the roles in that. And I thought it was right. One of my all-time favorite movies, maybe my all-time favorite, if you just go, you have to pick. It's always tough to pick, but...
It's a great one.
Goodfellas, I love it because it has so many chapters and covers so much ground. But there were some bigger names that were considered for that movie. Is that true?
Yeah, the studio wanted a big star to play the Leota part.
Leota.
Yeah.
But Scorsese said, like, if we have too many familiar faces, it's not going to ring true or it's going to be distracting.
Well, he knew who he wanted. But the interesting thing, which as a fan you'll get a kick out of, is that when you walked into his office, he had pictures, 8x10 pictures of real wise guys so that he could cast everything. And he ended up casting a lot of real wise guys in the movie, which is sort of interesting.
Oh. It's authentic now.
I mean, God, you think about how... Leota had to be nominated for that role.
I'm almost positive he was not. And I think... Now, you would know that better than I would, Mr. Ovitz, but wasn't De Niro first billed or on the poster his name's higher, like because he was the bigger star and they wanted it would get more people in the seats? Is that
well,
correct?
he was a bigger name.
Yeah, obviously.
So he went first.
How did they not... How is he not nominated?
A lot of things.
What
in
was that up against? Yeah.
I know.
I could be wrong, but look that up. I'm almost positive he was nominated.
Years and years, Marty was never nominated. You know, Kubrick was never nominated. There's a lot of amazing directors that were never nominated early on, finally won later in their careers.
So for you, God, I want to just you tell Paul Newman stories forever. Mm-hmm. I never met Paul. I have all his race cars, but I never met him. Everyone always asks. Everyone basically says if you wanted to just talk racing and be a regular guy, he was fine with that, but he didn't really like the Hollywood scene.
He really loved cars and racing. I mean, it was his life. He, aside from his charitable work, acting was something he did, and let's bear in mind, he was a big star at an early age. So he was a star a long time when movie stars were really serious movie stars. And he was a guy who loved to be around the track. He loved being in the pits. He loved driving. I remember when I was with him in Connecticut at dinner one night, he decided he wanted to try to make it back to the city. he had to be there early the next morning, decided he wanted to try to make it from Westport to New York in 1 hour. And
how'd he do?
He made it in 59 minutes. We only got stopped twice.
18-wheeler filled with Coors in tow.
He did it, Adam. He did that one time. I was on vacation in Hawaii with my family, and he had a deal with Budweiser. So I go back to my room, and I go to open the door, and the door won't open. And I push and push and push, and I finally get it open enough to slide in. He filled the room with cases of Budweiser.
Was there?
That's a friend.
Would he tell you that, look, here's the schedule? You know, if you're going to race and you want to do the season, then you have to compete for the points. So then they're going to be at Lime Rock, and then next they're going to Brainerd, then next they're going to Road Atlanta, then they're coming out to Laguna Seca. And it's like, it's a schedule. And if you miss them, you won't get any points. Thus, you won't be in the running for the championship. Would he just say, I can't run during these months or during this series, and then I can make movies after it?
Well, we blocked out the schedule, but it didn't always work, frankly. If you go back in history, there are some races he had to miss, but very few.
God, and I just, then it just gives me chills down my spine knowing that those cars are sitting over there. You should go, when we're done here, you should go over to the other shop and look at his cars.
It would be fun because I haven't seen him in a long time.
Did you get out to the track?
Oh, I would go out all the time. It was really fun. We used to go up and fly together to the races, and he particularly liked to go to Lime Rock and Sears Point just to practice, and I would go up with him. It was really – matter of fact, there's a story in the book I was with. He and Sidney Pollack, they were doing a movie called Absence of Malice that mm-hmm. I put them together on. And we flew up with Sidney. Sidney was a pilot. Sidney sat in the back. We had pilots in the front. And we were sitting there on our way up to Sears Point, and Paul decided it would be a good idea to do a barrel roll in a Lear 35.
In a Learjet.
Yeah, and that was this isn't a good idea. Because yeah. I knew
spill
what
your drink.
Well, yeah, Adam, it would read like this. Paul Newman, Sidney Pollack, and guest.
Yeah. And plus one.
Yeah, plus one. But so I turned my back, and he goes to the pilot. He winks at him, and the pilot did a 360-degree barrel roll.
Barrel roll in a Learjet.
With us holding drinks so that when we went upside down, the liquid stayed in the glass.
The Sears Point is Sonoma, right? That's up in wine country up there, mm-hmm. which is, geez, you remember what year that would have been?
Oh, God, it was whenever we did Absence of Malice sometime in the 80s.
We'll look it up. I might have that.
That's when it came out, so maybe 1980.
I'd have that car. All right, tell us, I'll tell you about Dollar Shave Club. How do you get ready? How do you do it today? Shower, brush your teeth, wash your face, style your hair, do it all with Dollar Shave Club. They have everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. Intense peppermint flavored Dollar Shave Club toothpaste, by the way. This stuff is great. Wakes up your mouth. I love this stuff, and I can't stand the weird bubblegum flavor and the kid stuff. It drives me nuts. Hydrating body cleanser smells awesome. Skin feels smooth after the shower. No matter what you do to get ready, Dollar Shave Club has everything you need. And I haven't even mentioned the razors and shea butter, which eventually I found today after a quest. After digging myself out of those pile of carbs, I found my shave butter and used the cartridges. You never run out of cartridges because they always show up at your door. It's Dollar Shave Club, right, Dawson?
Right now, you can get a Dollar Shave Club starter set for just $5 each. They've got a shower set, toothpaste, and toothbrush set, or their famous shave butter and razor. Any of those sets are just $5. It's the best way to try out their amazing products. And after your starter set, products will ship at regular price. Get yours today at dollarshaveclub.com/Adam. That's dollarshaveclub.com/Adam.
There you go. Mm-hmm. The book, Who is Michael Ovitz, is out as we speak. It's got some heft, and it's got some stories, and they talk about every movie you've ever loved and everyone who's ever been in them and all the behind the scenes. Michael, thank you for coming by.
My pleasure.
We appreciate it. Michael Ovitz, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with Gina Grad and the news right after this.
Adam and Drew, back together again.
Hey, man.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, man. Why should people listen to us every single day, Drew?
Because they complain that we're not around anymore, and where are you? Won't you guys come back? And lo and behold, we've been back the whole time. They need to listen to us every day.
And I think the world needs a nice dose of us.
Yes, it's that time.
Every day.
Yep, every
day. Podcast One and Apple.
It's healthy. It's healthy. It'll improve your soul.
Thank you.
Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew Pinsky. Getting it on 5 days a week. The Adam and Drew Show. Weekdays on Carolla Digital and Podcast One.
Engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Eat news with Gina. Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, Conor McGregor was defeated in the octagon over the weekend, but despite Khabib Nurmagomedov's victory, the main talking point of the night is what happened afterward. So according to Express.com, the 30-year-old lightweight champion vaulted out of the octagon, began scrapping with McGregor's team amongst the crowd. I'll show you a video in a second. Meanwhile, members of Khabib's entourage made their way into the cage to attack McGregor himself when he was still barely standing at that moment.
Nurmagomedov.
Yep. He claims that he and his team attacked McGregor and his entourage in the wake of McGregor. His behavior has been horrible leading up to the fight. Earlier this year, McGregor launched a dolly through the window of a bus with Khabib and his team on board.
Ooh, speaking of dolly.
I'm listening.
Guess who's got a little inside Hollywood news on Dolly Parton?
Nurmagomedov.
That's
right. Guess who may be doing a sitcom?
What?
Mm-hmm.
What do you know? What are you talking about? What's happening?
You know, I had 10 parties. I got ears.
What have you heard?
I know people.
Your tens bar.
He valets.
Yeah, there may be a little Dolly Parton project coming up.
Do they need me?
I was going to say.
Someone's got to work craft service.
They need a breast double?
Stand
in.
Yeah.
I can do lighting.
Somebody, I'm trying to think of where I was or at a party or whatever, getting a sort of inside scoop with everything. But yeah, she's doing a sitcom.
Oh, God bless her.
Wow. Yeah.
There's a lot coming out about her randomly, so that must be why, to generate some hype. And I literally just got a headline sent to me saying the story how she turned Elvis down. Elvis wanted I Will Always Love You, and she couldn't wait to give it to him. But he said, the colonel called the day before they were supposed to record and said, you know, Elvis has to have full publishing rights to any song he sings. Mm-hmm. And as bad as she wanted to give him that song, she said, I can't. I cannot give it up. And how many years later, Whitney Houston ran with it and made her fortune.
You never know, but I'm coming to a TV near you very soon. Mm-hmm. Dolly Parton.
Okay. I'm just going to try and be cool for the rest of this, and I got to Google something when I get home. So, basically, the dude threw the dolly through the window.
Yeah, he hopped over the fence, Melee. I get it.
You want to see it?
No.
Did you see it?
I saw it.
What happened? I didn't see it.
Well, it's the usual... It looks like every scuffle ever. He just went over the fence. He went into the crowd. You never get to the guy you're trying to get to. It's like when a professional athlete, a hockey player, goes up into the... They don't get the guy who threw the whatever at him.
The entourage got the guy. The entourage got McGregor.
Entourage jumps over and punches McGregor. But again, put it in context. McGregor's being punched by a world-class guy for the last four rounds. You know,
it's not... Madoff.
It's not as, you know, the guy's, you know, got a fist and he's not wearing a glove and everything. But, you know, the real thing is Khabib sort of dominated the fight and really doesn't look like they need to do it again. You know, there's some fights where you go, those guys need to do it again. This is one of those, he was kind of outclassed. And I thought he might be, and he was.
Question.
This guy's a real deal.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, Adam, I was with you the night of the fight. We were at a wedding, and it was Emmy's wedding, who works here. And during the reception, there's a fight going on, and all of a sudden, two projector screens just roll down in the middle of the reception and just start playing the fight on the big screen. I just want to know what
Emmy,
you thought of
good
that.
Good dude.
It was great.
Audience.
The guy who was running the resort was like, I thought you'd want to see the fight. And I was like, I was fine. I was just going to go home and watch highlights on SportsCenter. Next thing you know, fight was being shown at Emmy's wedding. It's just funny.
I'm sure Emmy appreciated that.
Yeah.
So question about this, because the NFL now has all of these, or at least, I don't know if it's just optics, but they have all these decorum rules and sportsmanship rules. And do you think that's going to take over the UFC now?
No.
Because McGregor says racist stuff. He says really, you know, nationality bashing stuff.
I am always sort of confused. Like Dana White gets to the microphone and Dana gets very serious and very stern, and he's like, we're holding the purses. There is no room for this in this octagon. What he did is we're going to look at it closely, and the punishment is going to be swift and severe. The Nevada Athletic Commission is blah, 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 blah. And the whole time it's like saying, do you think there's a Trump fan alive that is upset that he calls Warren Pocahontas? Like, do you think there's actually someone who loves Trump is like, but do you cross the line? You know, they love it. They don't care. These fans want to see fighting. They don't have delicate sensibilities. They love the hype, all the screaming. They showed the footage of them throwing the dolly into the bus 300 times before the fight.
It was so part of the promotional package.
Right. So if there's no place for this in the octagon, then why are you showing footage of what happened?
You're right. I had the exact same thought about Donald Trump. The appeal is you have to have a Mike Pence or an Ivanka to be like, well, we don't really condone what he said. But then he's never going to stop. It's part of his appeal. It's what people love about him.
Yeah, so it sells tickets. I understand the official position is we don't condone. You have to do that. Dana seems like one of the most, and I know him a little bit, one of the most straightest shooters in the world. Like, he really, most guys won't throw people under the bus, their own guys, or throw dollies into the bus or whatever it is.
Anything to do with the bus.
He is one of the guys, you don't see this in the NFL, you don't see it in the NBA, he is one of the guys who will go, that guy's out of line, that guy's going to get suspended, that guy's going to get into trouble, I'm not in a good mood, and that guy's going to have to fight hard to get back into this organization or whatever. Like, he's the straightest shooter of all time, but ultimately, the more this can turn into somewhere between a gang rape and a cockfight, the better for us. I mean, if you're into it. If you're not into it, look, if somebody says, what did you do Saturday night? And you go, oh, the symphony was in town. I went to Disney Hall. Then you're not going to be attracted to it anyway. If you're into this, it's just more of it.
Yeah.
And better and more hyped and more whatever.
That makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah, I just thought for political correctness, they would have to jump in at some point. But I guess not.
Your jumping off point are two guys in their underpants trying to kill each other. That's at its best. At its purest, that's where we're at. When one of the guys in his board shorts jumps over the fence and tries to put his hands on another drunken guy who's been screaming at him the entire time, is that crossing some line? There is no line.
Well, and specifically, I'm talking about McGregor's shit talking. The stuff leading up, the racist stuff and the whatever. I thought, look, we get it. You're feisty and this is your brand, but like, come on with some of the things you're saying.
No, but it's kind of interesting. It's a interesting glimpse into our new psyche, which is on the way to whatever he's saying, racist, sexist, whatever he's talking about. I don't even know what Khabib's.
Wasn't it with Mayweather when he said, dance for me, boy?
It's going to culminate with the guy attempting to kill the other person in the ring. So it's so funny that we've gotten away from the sticks and stones. We're now all about the words and not so much about the sticks and stones. keep in mind, he's going to try to twist the guy's head until it comes off legally, and that'll be sanctioned. So whatever he says on the way to that. Yep. Now, if he says, I don't know, Floyd Mayweather is a jigaboo, and so are all black people. Like, I don't. Then you're crossing a line.
Sure.
Whatever no one should ever say that.
Whatever he wants to say about microphone. The guy he's fighting,
yeah.
It's all in the hype. And it's professional wrestling at that point. At that point, we need as many clicks and as many downloads and pay-per-view buys as we can possibly get.
Yeah.
Look, if you were fighting somebody and you got a taste of the pay-per-view, you would pray it was Conor McGregor and that he was talking as much shit about you as humanly possible, right?
Yep.
It's true.
Okay.
That makes sense.
If the NFL went that route, like where pay-per-view many years down the road, you'd see the exact same thing in the NFL.
They'd be a little more lenient with some of those sportsmanship rules.
Yeah, they have to hype everything. Yeah. Yes.
Well, speaking of fighting, you are quite the soothsayer, Adam. I think you might have wished this into existence. This is news to us now. Spin.com reports that Limp Bizkit performed at the Rock Allegiance Festival in Camden, New Jersey, and during their set, one attendee ran on stage and attempted to hit frontman Fred Durst with a flying drop kick before being dragged off stage by security. But wait, the plot thickens. According to reports, the attacker was Insane Clown Posse member Shaggy Two Dope. Video footage of the incident shows the band just finishing up their cover of Faith, everyone's favorite, when the assailant runs on stage from the left side, comes close to Durst. Durst steps forward so he doesn't get kicked. Though numerous reports claim the ICP member to be responsible for the attack, it's hard to determine in the actual video. Here's what happened. I'll just let you see for yourself.
I could see their manager like going, look, Violent J, I could see this. Yeah. But Shaggy, come on.
Why can't you be more like Violent J?
I was watching the video, and I couldn't even figure out if Fred saw him.
He felt the wind behind him.
He just missed him.
Yeah.
But he did go for a super wrestling move, like a double kick. Yeah. Oh, we'll watch it.
Singing Faith.
Singing. Singing.
Crooning.
Maybe he didn't see him. He just like came up behind him, did a double flying back kick.
Eight dudes are on top of him right now.
He kind of bumped him, I guess. It's one guy. What's two guys?
Oh, they're fighting.
Poor Fred.
Fred's like, I gotta ruin a Nick Santoro movie.
Oh, he didn't know who it was? He said that guy. Oh, wow.
At least he's wearing protection. He's got gloves. And
this is not so different than the Green Day incident from the Weenie Roast many years ago with Third Eye Blind. It's guys in other bands are backstage. They have alcohol available.
What?
To them, as everything's available to them. I don't know that they always get along great with everyone else who's on the marquee, and I think sometimes they just do crazy things, but I don't know.
This isn't like friendly fraternal hazing.
Is there a chance it's like just mosh pit, like, you know, you got wrapped up in the moment? He was having faith.
You know, when I saw what's-his-name from Third Eye Blind do it to the bass player from Green Day, he was screwing around.
Yeah.
He ran over there to Mike, I think, the bass player, and he did it in a sort of, oh, I'm a fan, oh, I'm such a huge fan, and he sort of started hugging him from behind and stuff, and he was doing it as a goof, but there was a huge Samoan guy who worked security for Green Day, he didn't really see it
didn't
as a goof.
Didn't see the nuance.
Didn't get the goof memo, and so he just started beating the crap out of him. And then my favorite part about the greatest rock, and you know what is the essence of punk rock? Once the huge Samoan guy dragged the Third Eye Blind guy off of Mike, the bass player, Mike like turned around and he could see that it was a goof and that this was the guy from Third Eye Blind. And like, I was watching the whole thing from the side and I was like, oh, he's going to tell Chemo, like, hey, back off, or no, don't punch him, whatever. He kicked him. He was so punk rock. Like, he was like, oh, I know that dude. And then he stomped him.
How?
It was awesome.
Adam, I usually love the interaction, but I'm going to scoot over in case
Did I kick your foot?
You sure did.
Sorry,
it's okay. Yeah, I'm okay.
She's grinding your teeth through powder.
You see me crying. I'm trying to hold it in.
Sorry.
It's okay. I have a little, you want to hear real quick? I have a little bone, I broke the bone on the top of my foot. And he said it didn't pop off. I don't have like a rogue piece of bone ping-ponging around my foot, but it did come up. So he's hoping if I stay off of it for 3 weeks with his boot and with the crutches, it'll fuse back down. And so we're just gonna see what happens.
Please.
I'm sure I'll be just fine.
Do you have to ice it? Do you have to elevate it?
He says I don't have to ice it anymore because that was just to get the swelling to go down, but I really have to stay off of it. And someone, a podiatrist who listens to the show, sent me this link to like basically an exoskeleton that I could strap on and wear. Mm-hmm. And the podiatrist said...
like an alien.
Yeah, the podiatrist said...
Aliens.
Yeah, aliens.
He said, cool, but people do tend to get hurt on stuff like that because they get overconfident with like... the protection that's being offered. If you use your crutches, you know your limits. Just use the crutches unless you really, really want an exoskeleton. But I do get good parking for the few months.
All right, let me tell you guys about Felix Graham wearing my glasses right now. The average American blasts their eyes with screens 11 hours a day. Sad number. Computer work, checking Facebook and Twitter. Can't stop looking at the screens, but you can protect your eyes with a pair of Felix Gray glasses. They filter out 90% of high energy blue light and eliminate the glare coming off those screens. Felix Gray glasses aren't those weird computer glasses you've seen before. No yellow lenses, none of the weird tint. I'm wearing them right now. Clear as a bell. They've handcrafted them from a premium Italian acetate. So you do not look nerdy. There you go. Available in a non-prescription and prescription readers as well. And free shipping with free returns. There's nothing to lose. They look great.
They really do.
They do look great. So you can check them out at, where do we send people, Maxipata? Dawson will tell people where to go, right? Felix Gray.
Don't go another day looking at screens without help from some Felix Grays. Go to felixgray.com. Go to felixgrayglasses.com/Adam to protect your peepers today. That's felixgrayglasses.com/Adam. felixgrayglasses.com/Adam.
All right. What else?
Well, it's been a little quiet on the Cat Williams front. So we got hot pipe and Cat Williams
news. How can he still be alive?
It's impressive.
I'm not convinced he is.
Well, he's a cat.
Mm-hmm.
Got a few lives. Thank you. Cat Williams has been arrested again, this time for alleged assault in Portland, Oregon. TMZ says the comedian, quote,
wasn't he fighting a child last time we saw him?
Oh, yeah. No, that kid came up and punched him at a softball game or whatever that was. Yeah.
I got to tell you, when me and Dennis Prager showed up at the venue in Seattle, I can't remember which venue. It wasn't the Moore. It was another venue in Seattle. And the beleaguered guy was there. It's like, oh, thank God. Thank God. And he's like, you guys need anything in your dressing room or whatever? And like Prager was like, just some tap water and a used napkin. He's like, oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. Thank you. Thank you. And they're like, why? What happened? He's like, Cat Williams and Suge Knight were here the night before. And I was like, what happened? They showed up 5 hours late. Cat punched somebody in the audience. They demanded to be paid in cash. Cat threw $50,000 out of the window. A huge mob gathered out in the street. He's like, thank God. Prager's like, this napkin looks pretty new. Sure you don't have one that's been used? I don't want to soil a new one. And again, just tap water, no ice. Be fine. He's like, oh, dear God. And then the guy, like the sound guy, like walked by and he's like, yeah, it was a disaster. And he pointed at his shoes and he goes, but I bought some new shoes. And I'm like, what? He was like, I went out to the window. I was out in the street. Cat Williams like showed up with Suge Knight like hours late.
Of course he did.
Pushed all his cousins out on stage to open for him. Audience got rowdy. Punched somebody in the audience. Like, it's weird how you can function, right? Then you demand all cash. Then you start chucking cash out of the window. Like, it is weird how long you can go through life like this, right?
Oh, he's got many more years of this, I'm sure.
Was he being managed by Suge Knight back then?
Oh.
They like,
it's dark days now.
They took like a road trip to Seattle. They needed like It's also weird, makes you feel stupid, too. Like, how? All right, I'm just going to start demanding cash and new tennis shoes wherever I go. Like,
you didn't realize that was an option.
Where are these suckers paying taxes and getting checks and having things clear and all that?
Like, chump.
Oh, yeah, it's like a briefcase of cash and new tennis shoes and cartons of cigarettes and then starts chucking it out the window. Yeah, I think Suge Knight was managing him.
That's awesome.
At the time. Anyway.
Well, that won't be an issue
imagine
anymore.
The last act is Suge Knight. Oh, he's like, there's half-naked chicks running up and down the hall, like underage chicks running up and down the hall. And then me and Dennis Prager show up for the next event. Yeah. I must have got the bends.
How confused was Prager when you explained who Cat Williams and Suge Knight were?
I think this guy was trying to do all the explaining. Okay. Suge was his manager.
I'm not seeing that, but there is a report for that weekend. He was arrested for getting into a fight with some bar patrons, where he brandished a pool cue at a bar manager, refused to leave, and then followed a family outside the bar. Where, as a family got into the car, he flicked a cigarette through the car window at a woman, striking her just below the eye, and also threw a rock at the car.
Jesus.
Cat Williams?
Yeah.
There's so many ways to avoid these facets of life. Yes, it's so doable. It's eminently doable. Why is
some
it?
Some might say it's easier to avoid it.
Why is it impossible for some people to, like, I cannot do a live stand-up show without hitting someone who bought a ticket with my microphone?
Yeah.
I'm seeing a lot of, like, Suge Knight and Cat Williams arrested together and stuff, but that's, like, 3 years after you guys were at the Paramounts. I don't know.
He must have drove him. They said they drove him out. Like, he was managing him.
Yeah. Well, this reason won't...
At the Paramount, by the way, there's footage of him just punching, clobbering somebody with the microphone at the show.
Oh, yeah.
I had a thought, the same thought I had when I was watching the Dr. Ford testimony and the whole Kavanaugh thing went on for weeks. I was like, aren't there many other conservative justices they could nominate that would give them much less of a headache and pose much less of a, you know, there would be no controversy whatsoever? Like, why?
There's
why
a list.
Why are they clinging? Aren't there many more comics you could book for more or less the same audience that would give you much, much less of a headache? Like, is Cat Williams that big of a draw? Is he worth the headache is what I'm saying.
I have no idea. The Kavanaugh answer is, if you got somebody who may get rid of Roe v. Wade, they would go after whoever with the same vigor.
Okay.
Because they go back to a high school yearbook. I mean, they go after whoever got nominated.
Okay. No, I understand that, but I'm saying I just felt like there were probably 12 other people who would have much less of an obstacle, but...
Well, they would start off that way, but eventually they'd get to them in high school, and then they wouldn't.
Okay,
that's what I'm assuming. That's how it would go down. But Cat, yes, I don't know why anyone needs to work with Cat Williams. But sorry, go ahead.
Well, this will not disappoint. The reason that he got into a scuffle this time, TMZ says he allegedly, quote, attacked the driver of a town car that was supposed to take him to the Moda Center Friday night after an argument about transporting his dog. The driver reportedly suffered injuries to his face. According to police, Cat left the scene but was picked up the next day. He'll likely stay in jail until early this week as authorities decide whether he will be extradited to Georgia, where he faces a felony warrant. Quick guess.
He must, Max Patta, you got to look this up, but I don't know how you look it up, but somebody must have put their hands on him a lot as a kid, because his conflict resolution involves hitting people.
He defaults to physical...
He has
resolution.
Been arrested about a dozen times in the last 8 years.
I know. Like, he is going to kill somebody, or more likely, somebody's going to kill him.
Upon first glance, he emancipated himself from his parents at the age of 13, moved to Florida, and supported himself as a street vendor.
Wow.
Street vendor. He's a
wow.
He's street. The Oliver Twist.
Street vendor. What's it, iPhone cases?
All right. Sorry. What else?
Well, a manhunt is underway in Kentucky for two escaped prisoners who slipped out. Do you want to guess how they got out?
I pray it was in something round. Either ducting.
Okay.
I always like ducting, and a sewage, not so bad either. Some pipe of some conduit that carries something somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Or something to do with the laundry.
That was my guess. I'm going to say laundry.
I like the big rolling hamper thing.
You're both very, very close. This time, it was the trash. Officials at the Louisville Metro Correctional Facility, it's a minimum security prison, say Justin and Stumler. Yeah.
For a change, it's white trash.
Good.
That's true.
Good. Two white dudes.
Jeremy Hunt escaped in the food waste trash cans that were taken outside the facility for disposal.
Correctional?
Yeah.
It's the new style.
That's good.
Right.
All the guys are going Metro Correctional.
Yeah. Both these guys worked in the prisons. They both worked in the kitchen, so it's pretty easy, I guess. But talk about snitches get stitches. Another inmate witnessed the escape and alerted officers.
Aww.
They got ratted out. Stumler was locked up on charges of motor vehicle theft as well as several drug and weapons charges. Hunt was convicted on burglary charges. Neither of them have been recaptured.
Oh, do you guys
on the run?
Don't you feel like... I'm escaping from prison and sort of outrunning Johnny Law. Like back in the day, the hillbilly guys picking the banjo. You find the dirt road. You turn your lights off. You know, now there's a police helicopter in the air and it's got the heat signature thing and they can find you and the spotlight and everything. Back in the day, I mean, we're at the end of assuming a new identity, blowing into town. Hey, stranger, my name's Bob Johnson. And then you get a job on a ranch or something.
Live a simple life.
Didn't you?
Got any work I can pick up?
That's
yeah, like Nazi war criminals or kingpins and mafias. Like, they used to be able to kind of escape that life. Now, and everything's just a barcode and a swipe and a number. And like there is no...
The romantic notion of living on the lam.
That's exactly right. That's what I was going to say about your romantic notion of the pickpocket, the escape prison guy who just laid low and lived a simple life. That's not going to exist anymore. These guys are going to get caught.
You get spotted. First, you walk down the street, an ATM camera takes a click of you. Not an ATM that you use, just one that's on the street as you're walking past it. And like there is no more starting a new life, right?
Yeah. I hope not.
To that end, Mini Bollywood, see the old man in the gun. With Robert Redford. You especially, Adam, would like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good little movie, 90 minutes. It's sort of like a nicer, gentler version of Heat. Like it's the bank robber who's, ready to hang it up, but he had one last job.
I'd like to recommend a movie. Now, people think they saw The Old Man and the Sea, but this is a capital C, and it's just this old guy and his bitch of a wife.
Browbeats him?
No, never stops.
Did you take out the trash?
It's the old man and the capital C, and it's 90 minutes of her just haranguing him.
Sure, he thinks she can leave her trash can in front of our driveway, but she can't.
My mother always said you were no good.
I should have listened to her.
That's amazing.
The old man and the capital C. Look it up.
The old man and the C.
The old man and the C. Sorry. The old man and the letter C. All right. So these guys are going to get caught. And not only is there no more... starting a new life, there's no more faking your death.
Oh.
You used to be able to go, this is a two-way street. Yeah. You used to be able to start a new life.
Yep.
And you used to be able to fake your death.
You know who I think the last major attempt of that was, and it didn't work out because we know it was a fake? Olivia Newton-John's, was it husband or boyfriend?
Her boyfriend.
That was crazy.
They were out heading to like Baja on a fishing boat or something.
And he, was it? Did he have a mistress and he just wanted to start over?
Well, his mistress could have been the sea.
That's right. That's
his mistress was a sea.
Right.
No, he
tried to fake his death.
Olivia Newton-John and him like went out on a tuna boat or something, and then he never came back.
Right.
And there was like something about Mexican waters or something, and they were like fishing. And did he ever show up?
I thought he did because that's how we found out it was fake, right? I'm Chris by looking it up.
Or maybe he's with Natalie Wood somewhere living on an island.
Wow.
What happened with that story, Max Zapata? But yes, he did kind of try to.
Yeah.
Look, here, I'll amend this. You still can attempt to fake your own death, but it has to be in Mexico. Forget about Canada and the United States. It's not going to work.
Yeah,
but if you can get
to
Mexico, you may be able to fake your death. It's still
on
the
mesa.
That's right.
So he was an American cameraman of Korean descent. He was the on and off boyfriend of Olivia Newton-John. Disappeared in 2005 while on a fishing trip. The then 48-year-old set off on the fishing boat from San Pedro in June, and then disappeared with personal items, including his wallet, left aboard. And then in November 2008, they concluded that he most likely drowned. And then they later found him, said that he believed he was living in a boat off the west coast of Mexico.
I told you.
That's
you can
how
only
done.
Do it. Yeah. You can only do it in Mexico. There's still, it's kind of nice to know that there's a crazy pharmacy that's always open.
Mm-hmm.
And it's known as Mexico.
With his German girlfriend.
I love this
there
guy.
It is.
This guy's my hero.
Now we got to see the girlfriend.
What did Olivia Newton-John know about this?
I don't know. They didn't. This article doesn't have any quotes from her.
Well, he's still doing it then?
See or maybe pulled it off. See if August can book her.
All right, let's bring it home.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina!
How dare you?
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Completely out of context. Let me tell you about Castrol Edge. Heat, friction, viscosity breakdown rob your engine of maximum performance. Friction results in loss of performance up to 10%. Castrol Edge, engineered with fluid titanium technology, physically transforms to be stronger under pressure, helps fight friction, and delivers maximum levels of performance for your car. Three times,
fool!
Stronger against viscosity breakdown than leading full synthetics. It is Castrol Edge. Unlock the true performance in your car's engine. All right, let's see. Live shows coming up all over the place. I'm going to be in San Mateo at the County Event Center. Has that been switched?
Yeah, so it's been moved. You were supposed to be on the 14th, and now you're on the 13th.
13th. All right.
Where I went to high school.
Los Angeles. Oh, San Mateo. That's
enjoy.
Right. San Mateo, LA Convention Center coming up, Politicon. That's October 20th. It's Phoenix, Stand Up Live, October 27th. Me and Mike August up on stage, basic cable commentary. Anaheim Grove coming up, live shows. Go to adamcarolla.com for all the live shows. And go to Corolla Drinks for Sunday football. Say hi to Lynette over there. Get a little wine, some Endless Rants, some Mangria, and all that good stuff. And say hi to our friend John Taffer. No Excuses, name of his pod on Podcast One. And he's joined by Jenny McCarthy coming up this week. Say hi in Podcast One, Apple, iTunes, all that stuff. So, and Mike Ovitz as well. Michael Ovitz. Who is Michael Ovitz? Dean Cain tomorrow. Superman coming in here. And until next time, Adam Carolla for Michael Ovitz and Gina Grad and Paul Bryan. Say it. Mahalo. Miyama or something, you know, K, something Miyama or something. Like.
Follow the show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Click the link at AdamCarolla.com to subscribe to Take a Knee for a weekly dose of inspiration and motivation. And subscribe to Fantasy BS, hosted by Bald Brian and Sony Carolla on Podcast One. October 27th, two basic cable commentary shows coming to Stand Up Live with the Ace Man and Mike August. Make sure you get yours. And remember, this Saturday, Corolla Drinks presents the World Championship of Guacamole at Sea Legs in Huntington Beach. Tickets and info on all the live podcasts, the Mangry events, the books, the movies, the more. Go to AdamCarolla.com.